What's up, you guys? Sean Ross at FightfulSelect.com. This is the Backstage Report podcast. I ain't giving it to you a little bit early. I like to do that whenever I can. I'll drop it on a Sunday. That way our Select subscribers get even more of a heads up before this news kind of makes its way out there. But we've got just a ton to talk about. Lots of transaction updates, all that good stuff. But let's go ahead and get into this. Deonna Purrazzo. I spoke to her. An interview is dropping on Monday. Lots of people were asking about her contract status. She had been working on a per-appearance deal. I reported that Impact had offered her a long-term deal. Deonna Purrazzo confirmed to me she does want to remain with Impact Wrestling long-term and made that very clear to them. I would expect some news to emerge on that pretty soon. Purrazzo was a big signing for Impact Wrestling this year, and you can thank Madison Rayne for her coming in. Deonna told Fightful that Madison reached out to her to check on her after the NXT release and has long been one of her biggest supporters. She discussed bringing Purrazzo in, got her in touch with Scott D'Amore, who made the deal happen. Deonna told me that she thought that the fact that she wasn't away from WWE that long really played to her benefit and helped her out. She was able to capitalize off of that support and the buzz that she had coming out of WWE, and it's worked out really, really well for her. There's a lot to this interview. It drops Monday at noon, so make sure you guys check it out. We talk Bound for Glory. We talk her old TNA appearances. We talk about her free agency period, which she said that she wasn't that scared of until she talked to her dad, and her dad is like, what are you going to do for work? Like, you can't teach right now. You have to do something. And she was like, well, I should probably get a job in wrestling if that's how it's going to work out, because Ring of Honor was not running. AEW wasn't really handing out contracts at that point. So Impact Wrestling came along at the perfect time. And she talked about how much she really enjoyed Gail Kim producing her matches because she grew up watching Gail Kim. That's where we are in wrestling now. A lot of these people that a lot of people my age watched wrestling. I mean, like, we watched Gail Kim, and it was just normal to see her running the ship. And now you got these people in their mid-20s, early-20s, like Deonna Purrazzo, who are having their work produced by people that they watched growing up, not that they were watching as adults. It's a pretty unique situation. But Deonna Purrazzo seems very happy in Impact Wrestling. She told me that the roster was a big drawing point to bring her there. She had a lot of source material to work from, a lot of people to work with, including Kylie Rae ahead of Bound for Glory on October 24th. They faced each other before, but they were both kind of on the come up then. Kylie especially. Deonna had sort of established herself at that point. But check out that interview Monday at noon. NXT, oh man, there is a lot of tight lips about the Kyle O'Reilly injury. They're playing it very close to the vest. People in NXT don't even know, like, what's going on with Kyle O'Reilly. I'm sure some close to him do, but they're keeping that really quiet. But there's a lot of frustration backstage in NXT in a lot of other situations. Things got hectic backstage this week at NXT. There's been a lot of change, frustration, and uncertainty. Backstage, we've learned that there were a lot of technical difficulties and errors at the Wednesday tapings that led to some frustration at the production table. Many in NXT pretty well agree that those in charge are in kind of a rough position right now. Due to the stream of injuries last week, Kyle O'Reilly, Finn Balor, Ridge Holland, Tegan Nox recently, they were put in a really bad position, and that you could tell that they were really starting to feel it. And they're also in a relatively new venue, so all things considered. So, yeah, there were some high tensions backstage in NXT. That seems like it's carried over to trainees as well. We've heard from several people and several people connected to trainees that were set to return, I think, this past Thursday, but a lot of people were not comfortable with coming back. And from what I understand, a lot of that is based on the fact that there's a lot of COVID truthers in NXT. A lot of people that aren't taking it seriously, that are going to parties, that are going out, they're not wearing their masks, they're not doing any of that stuff. That puts everybody else in jeopardy, because as far as I've learned, they're not testing every single day, and they're supposed to be training multiple days a week. I don't know who all is and who all isn't, but I know that there's a lot of frustration there over the proper safety precautions not being taken, not even necessarily by WWE, but the people that are training there. And considering the fact that we are on outbreak number 2 within WWE since June, or just past it, there are a lot of people there that think that it should be handled a little bit better. And it's, man, it's a lot of people. It is a whole lot of people. Because I hear from one person, then I ask 10 more people. And then when I ask 10 more people, the stuff that they tell me ends up leading me to ask 10 more people. And I would say about 75% of these are people that are saying, man, it doesn't make any sense. These people are not taking it seriously, and they're putting everybody at risk as a result. So hopefully that changes, because I don't want these people to get sick. Not good. Can't believe I'm talking about this, but I had a lot of people asking about the Ministry of Darkness, and I posted a select update on that. This is after Kevin Owens brought them up on Raw. Obviously, Edge is still wrestling. JBL, Christian, Undertaker still associated with WWE. Viscera unfortunately passed away in 2014. Ron Simmons still makes appearances, sometimes in conjunction with WWE. Gangrel is actually still very, very active on the independent circuit. Anthony Green, new WWE signing, told me right before he went to work for the company that he thought that Gangrel could have like a PCO run. He thought that Gangrel could go out there and get a lot of bookings and do really well, and he is. He's worked for Black Label Pro, Wrestle Pro, Ring of Honor all this year. Midian is perhaps the one that a lot of people don't know what he's up to, and I've heard that he has kept his own catering company up. He's in the culinary industry as a chef. He does not wrestle anymore. He does not do a lot of appearances. I have tried to reach out to him for an interview. He's the kind of person I like to talk to. He did a lot of different stuff. He was in WCW. He was in WWF. He was a tag team champion. He switched up and did the Midian character as a serious guy. He was European champion at one point. He did the naked Midian thing. Oh, and then he came back and did an appearance in 04. But I would love to talk to him. But yeah, Ministry of Darkness, guys. Battleground. WWE video game paychecks obviously aren't quite what they used to be, as most talent will tell you when you talk to them about it. But one talent in WWE told Fightful they would get a $35,000 bonus for appearing in WWE Battlegrounds, which doesn't appear like it's going to sell anywhere near the usual games. However, there were others that faced some confusion, as they would be included in downloadable content of the game, but didn't have main roster contracts, so they wouldn't get that bonus. A lot of frustration there. Hopefully that's just a miscommunication and they are actually getting paid, but that's just word from wrestlers. I can't say that to be completely guaranteed. Lars Sullivan made his return. So when he went down with a knee injury last year, the company almost immediately had him on injury report lists as a return date of June 2020. And I was told by like multiple times that Sullivan himself expected to be back much sooner, that he was telling people in the company, no, I've been through this before. I've had knee injuries before. I've been through the knee surgeries before. I'm going to make it back a lot quicker. And then around like the fall, winter months, the reality kind of hit him that he was going to be out for a very long time. He posted a video about his rehab in December, and he was nowhere near returning, and there were a bunch of sites that reported, oh my gosh, he's clearly ready to return. No, this was an uphill battle from what I understand. And those that I've talked to within WWE indicated that he ended up having to get both knees fixed, and the outlook went from roughly a year out of action to 16 to 18 months that we saw. Originally, WWE had major plans for Lars Sullivan. This is a guy who, before his breakdown of sorts, was tentatively penciled in to face Brock Lesnar in the future. I can tell you, there was some real heat on him over the racial comments that he made prior to his signing that landed him a $100,000 fine. But I also spoke to several people on the roster that said that He went out of his way to explain that, apologize for that. I can't say that that happened unanimously. I can just tell you that I talked to multiple people that said that he did what he could to make good on that and try to explain to people that that wasn't really him. And basically what I was told is that he was chalking it up to him being a troll and apologizing and all that. The people that I spoke to seemed satisfied, but that's up to each person individually. Can't really do a catch-all on that. There was no heat on him for the controversies of, quite frankly, a porn video of him emerged earlier this year from years and years ago. There was no heat on him for that at all whatsoever that I heard. I don't even know if they had a ton of contact with him about it, but I asked if there was any heat and was just told, no. Got some AEW news. Some of you might wonder who books all the talent for AEW, for Dark and all that. Now, Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, has been widely credited for speaking out to bring some wrestlers in, specifically Kylie Rae. Kylie Rae told me that Britt Baker put in a good word for her, reached out to her, said, would you be interested in coming in, made it happen. Wardlow, who is there with MJF every single week, credited Britt Baker for bringing him in. Then Ben Carter, who appeared on Dark and Late Night Dynamite. He's going to be on an Impact match this week. I've got some news on that coming very soon, but she was credited for bringing him to Tony Khan's attention. However, I'm told that usually Christopher Daniels and QT Marshall are the ones that put wrestlers in contact or get in contact with wrestlers about coming in. Marshall helps the Nightmare Factory as well. And there are countless Ring of Honor wrestlers that have told me that Christopher Daniels either got them work or recruited them to Ring of Honor over the years. You don't really realize how big a loss from somebody like Christopher Daniels is to a Ring of Honor until you find out like what they do and who they're responsible for. Like Jeff Cobb, for example. Daniels brought in Jeff Cobb to Ring of Honor, and that obviously worked out pretty well for them. And now he's doing it for AEW and wrestling here and there and doing digital stuff. But also last week, I spent time asking AEW talent and New Japan talent if they thought that Harold May's ousting would lead to a partnership between AEW and New Japan. And we got some interesting responses. Those that I spoke to who haven't worked in Japan much said they haven't heard a ton of talk about the move and it wasn't a primary concern for them anyway. But we did hear the same talking point that almost everybody knows. There were some hurt feelings on both sides of the New Japan split with Omega, with the Bucks, with people like that. I don't want to say them specifically, just generalizing that there were some hurt feelings involved on both sides with how the notification of this move would be handled and the booking implementation or lack thereof by New Japan's side after that. Another top talent said it definitely won't hurt things. Most people here are still in touch with the people over there, and May had alienated a lot of the English speakers they had on the roster. There wasn't a lot of belief in him to begin with, but the way he handled that wasn't good. Tony Khan has done his best to keep it amicable. And then I followed up with another talent about Khan's efforts to remain amicable. And that person said, a lot of deals are set up to allow people to work there. He could avoid that if he wanted to. I think that's a pretty clear sign, whether he says it or not, that he wants to. I don't know if he had a personal relationship with Harold, but I did, and I didn't want to do business with him anymore. And that was a New Japan star that told me that. Even one person on the New Japan roster told us they were hopeful for a relationship to develop because it would mean more money for New Japan, AEW, and the wrestlers, but said that due to New Japan's expansion into the States, it might throw a bit of a hiccup into that possibility. Oh boy, we have an unfortunate and evolving story here. So this past week, you may have noticed that Ethan Page took to Twitter. He took exception to the fact that GCW was promoting trading cards with his likeness on it without being conferred about it. Joey Janela then jokingly sent him a couple bucks on PayPal, which he posted, and Ethan Page was hot over it. Felt disrespected, and from what I understand, Joey Janela and Ethan Page both talked it out. Like from what I understand, I think Joey Janela reached out to Ethan Page, and apparently they hashed it out in person as well at the Collective. That did not go the same way with Ethan Page and Brett Lauderdale. Now, I know that they had some sort of conversation before the collective. I just don't know what it was about. But Ethan Page was hot about this throughout the weekend. And at left Black Label Pro's show on Sunday, I'm told, after having a verbal confrontation with Brett Lauderdale. And from what I heard, Ethan Page was hot about it and wanted Brett Lauderdale to apologize. Brett Lauderdale wanted Ethan Page to apologize, and neither one of them apologized. And Brett Lauderdale was of the belief that he's providing a platform for a lot of people, and the cards are a minimal thing, and Ethan Page felt disrespected in that. I've reached out to both of them. I'll let you know when I hear back from it, but things looked like they were okay Saturday. They were not okay by Sunday. They were not okay by Sunday. Things did not go smoothly there. Several wrestlers told me that they heard the confrontation, saw the confrontation, but weren't exactly sure what was said. I'll try to find out, but here's the hoping they end up working it out. Ethan Page is one of the more entertaining acts in wrestling right now. He's clearly worked very hard. And GCW as a brand under Brett Lauderdale has flourished. And you hate to hear anything like this. You hate to hear something like this based on what is likely a miscommunication, but probably both people feel disrespected in that sense. So we'll see how it goes. And again, I have reached out to both people and hope to get some more information. In regards to Deonna Purrazzo pulling out, she told me that she wouldn't have had enough time to properly quarantine between now and Bound for Glory, where she is featured prominently. And also, she lives with her boyfriend, WWE superstar Steve Cutler, who she said is trying to get back on TV and didn't want to run the risk of possibly infecting him based on being around so many people at the collective. She said that there didn't seem to be any heat, and that was confirmed to me by people at the collective, that there wasn't any heat on her for doing that, and they know that she wanted to keep the booking, but understood why. Oh boy, there are a lot of injury updates and a lot of good news, actually. Xavier Woods is back. He missed almost a year. It was last October when he was sidelined. It is so good to see him back. And he is new WWE SmackDown Tag Team Champion with Kofi Kingston, who is also back. Now, some of you might remember that Kofi Kingston said when the push with Big E started that he was going to miss 6 weeks. It was a little bit longer than that. His last match was just under 3 months ago. Good to see him back. And actually, the last time we saw Kofi Kingston in a match, they lost their tag titles to Nakamura and Cesaro, so they regained them on SmackDown, then got traded to Raw, or got drafted to Raw. I'll make sense of those rosters eventually. Lars Sullivan, you know he's back. I just told you about it. Lots of other returns. Dexter Lumis, great to see him back. He injured his ankle on that flip that had to be heavily edited on NXT a while back. Boa returned. Now, I know a lot of you are going, well, who the hell's Boa? And why are you even updating him? Well, Boa has been out of action for quite a while. He hasn't wrestled since last October 26th on a live event. He did some NXT TV spots against Cameron Grimes, Killian Dane, maybe a couple others along the way. But he returned and did stuff with Xia Li on NXT this week. Good to see him back, regardless. Updated the inactives. Indu Share has been off TV since June 6th after Sarov spoiled an NXT show. Ridge Holland had surgery. Oh my God, dislocated and broke his ankle, dislocated and ruptured his patella. Horrible timing. I thought he had a whole lot of upside, but that simple spot turned his leg completely over. Even a hoss cat like that, a real sirloin beef son's a bitch, and he's probably going to be out for at least a year. That's just my estimate. Hope he gets better soon. That's horrible. Eric of the Viking Raiders announced he had arm surgery on October 6th. He was still included in the draft pool, so that is promising. Ivar was not. Kyle O'Reilly, unspecified injury at TakeOver. Finn Balor broke his jaw. Some good news, though. Samoa Joe, he's not wrestled since February 2020, and really, He came back, worked for a month, and beside that month, he's been missing for about a year. He was not in the draft pool, but he said he is not done wrestling by a long shot. That's great news. That makes me very happy. I can't really update you on transactions too much right now because we don't know who's going to go where with trades and all that. But Grand Metalik, Lince Dorado, Mickey James, Shorty G, Chad Gable were all free agents. So they're all eligible to sign wherever they want within the context of the storyline. But I did want to let you know of the names that were kept out of the draft pool for various reasons. You know I like for things to make sense. If you listen to any of my reviews, you know that's a baseline for me. If something doesn't make sense within a story, I get kind of I get a lot frustrated over it because it's very easy. Another one of those teams that have been inactive, the Bollywood Boys, Sameer and Sunil Singh. They are headed back to 205 Live. Good to see them back in action. They've been out, basically stuck outside the country, I believe. But the Forgotten Sons were not in the draft pool whatsoever. That was a bit surprising. Mojo Rawley, not in the draft pool. Also a bit surprising. Jinder Mahal, not in the draft pool. He was in last year's, even though he was nowhere near return. Jimmy Uso, not in the draft pool, even though Jay was. Ivar, not in the draft pool. Eric was. Some other names, Bo Dallas, he hasn't been around for about a year, not in it. And then primarily your part-timers, Bill Goldberg, The Big Show, The Undertaker, John Cena, they are not in the draft pool. And Edge also was not. Becky Lynch, Sonya Deville, not included as well. Stats for the week as we wrap up. Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke 2-0 as a team. Nia Jax put Lana through a table for the third time. Dominic Mysterio has had 9 matches. All have been against Seth Rollins or Buddy Murphy. 4 have been against them as a team, and 6 have had Murphy in them. Keith Lee has had 8 matches on Raw. 5 have ended in a DQ, countout, or no contest. Apollo Crews has now faced members of the Hurt Business in 15 consecutive matches. From June 15th through October, he's not faced anybody else. The Hurt Business won the 8th of those 15 matches. Ruby Riott and Liv Morgan had their first loss as teammates on WWE since before WrestleMania 35. Allie has not appeared on AEW Dynamite since making the finals of the Women's Tag Tournament, but is 2-0 on Dark. Ember Moon competed in her first match in just over a year, and it was her first NXT match since April 2018. Dakota Kai has no wins in her last 3 matches and hasn't won 2 matches in a row since June. Raquel Gonzalez's last singles win was back in May. Mr. Brody Lee suffered his first pinfall loss since coming to AEW. It was the first time he'd been pinned on cable TV since August 21st, 2018, and the first time on TV at all since the 2019 Hell in a Cell. Xavier Woods competed in his first match since October 21, 2019, and he, Ember Moon, and Lars Sullivan had all been out since at least last October and returned within 1 week of one another. Guys, thank you all so much. Any recommendations, anything you want us to cover, let us know. Drop this early. We got the Weekender podcast coming Monday. That's because Steven Jensen is covering all the stuff from the collective. Stay tuned. Thank you guys so much. I truly appreciate all of you. We're out.